You're listening to For the Show We Go Baseball Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 70 of To the Show We Go. We got Chris Henrique and myself, Andrew Parker. I got a treat for you guys today's episode. I want to say this, but I don't want it to get back to our guys, Mike and Jim and Jay and Cooper in the broadcast booth. But I think our guest today, Mr. Tyler Murray, is one of our favorite broadcasters. Probably top the power rankings right now. Don't get the head too big. But yeah, we have Tyler Murray on. He's the voice. Let me actually read the Twitter bio for it. He is the play-by-play broadcaster for your Worcester Red Sox and Hockey East on NESN, which I have been getting a lot more into because of you. So thank you for that, Tyler. You also do UMass basketball, football. I mean, you've been doing pretty much everything this winter. But yeah, I want to start us off. What have you been doing since the Woo Sox season ended?
Oh, man. Well, I've been watching To the Show We Go. 70 episodes in 5 months, you guys. That is a record pace. Congratulations. It's an honor to be on a round number episode. And whenever you talk about our incredible Woo Sox broadcast team, all you have to say is you're one of my six favorite broadcasters on the Woo Sox broadcast. So thank you for that compliment. We're super lucky to work with those guys. But, yeah, a lot of – I mean, once UMass football season ends, it's a lot of hockey and basketball back and forth. So maybe two basketball games a week, whether it's UMass or University of New Hampshire. And then we do the Hockey East game of the week, which is a Friday-Saturday combo. And playoff time is here. So it's a really exciting time. A lot of cramming, of course, to get ready for do-or-die hockey. And then some Woo Sox baseball. But we signed up for this. We wouldn't have it any other way.
I did want to start us off. I wanted to talk about last year, obviously, before we get to, like, obviously, like, spring training things and 2024 and all that. But we got to be along with the ride for you, with you, actually, at Polar Park, so this past year. But I feel like, besides talking about the rain delays and some of the more depressing things that went on, obviously, like, not making the playoffs after you were kind of calculating, like, how you were going to get a trip to Las Vegas, but... how did 2023 go for you, I guess, just at Polar Park and just your experience covering the 2023 Worcester Red Sox?
I mean, when you're working at Polar Park every day and you're talking to a manager like Chad Tracy every day, it's tough to be in a bad mood, even if you don't make the playoffs. But I remember looking at the opening day roster and we kind of do like an over under. Okay, they're going to be above 500 or below 500. And I kind of thought, well, it's around a 500 team. But no, I was wrong, like, especially when they got that influx of talent toward the second half of the year. You saw Willie Abreu hit his stride and become a reliable everyday guy in the lineup. Seydon Rafaela took over in the month of August. And maybe it wasn't as complete of a team as you would need to stack up with the dynasty of the Durham Bulls or what was probably the best team in minor league baseball, the Norfolk Tides. But there were so many individual stories that got you really excited for the future of AAA and then, of course, the big leagues. But, you know, there's no reason to think with some of the additions they've had that they can't make another run. The issue is, of course, and we're still waiting to confirm the playoff format, but, you know, it's 20 teams and only two of them get to make the playoffs. I think in a lot of different playoff formats, the Woo Sox are probably in, but down the stretch, they just couldn't quite keep up with Durham in that second half playoff race.
Yeah, that Norfolk team, by the way, that came into Worcester towards the end of last year, and I think they took five out of six, I believe.
First five in a row to start the series, and that was kind of the end of it. That was, all right, if we can prove a good series against these guys, we're right in it. But that kind of knocked the Woo Sox down and out of contention, but for good reason. I mean, that was probably the best group of players I've seen all year.
Yeah, it's and I remember me and Chris have talked about this as well, and I think we brought it up when we had Chad Tracy on earlier in the offseason on the show in regards to that team. That Norfolk team obviously went on to win the championship, so they were pretty dang good. But then the team that we saw early in the year, the Columbus Clippers, were like one of the best teams that – I mean, I think they just had all the guys, like Bybee was down there who ended up like going up to the majors and was fantastic. Freeman, there was just a ton of guys that were just like Naylor was out there. Just
I think Freeman is still getting on base.
Yes.
In that series, it's all he did was get on base. It didn't matter how, he just got on base.
It's one of those weeks when you're like, okay, he's going to be in the big leagues next month. He's going to have an opening day start next year. But if you had told me that Columbus series happened in 2009, I would believe you. That feels like years and years ago. But it's just the grind of the season, man. So it's fun to see talent like that come in.
So I did. So in regards to last year, you had brought up Willy Abreu. You brought up a few other guys, obviously, like seeing Sidan Rafaela come up. And then you see guys like Brandon Walter and Chris Murphy go up and make their big league debuts. David Hamilton as well. Valdez, all a bunch of guys that went up and made debuts. What was it like, I guess, getting a first glimpse at a guy like Rafael and a guy like Abreu and just seeing them be special before? And you kind of know after calling like every single at bat that they take, it's like, so when they go up and have success, like Willy Abreu did at the MLB level, I guess, is that like a cool feeling for you?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I think you ask anyone, and that's kind of the highlight of the job is being able to see these guys do their thing at the major league level. Because, I mean, you can look at our position. We know how hard it is just to get to AAA as broadcasters, let alone as players. So you just imagine how great it is for those guys to get there and then succeed. I mean, for Abreu, he had that 3-homer game, and it's like, all right, this guy, what else does this guy have to prove? We know how good his arm is. We know how good defensively he is and how smart of a player Willy Abreu is. And then he hits, what, an 800-foot home run in one of his first games. So he lights it up. But Sidan Rafaela, he's such a highly valued prospect that I don't think we've ever had a player come to AAA where it was so clear-cut what he was doing well and what he needed to do better. And you guys know the story. He was probably the best center fielder and shortstop, if you like, in the system. But it's all about that pitch selection. So you know, sometimes we get players called up and says, okay, let's see what he's got. But no, it was, okay, watch this guy. He's amazing. What can he do for pitch selection? And the revelation for him in Syracuse, this was a game in August. He saw 19 pitches in that game. He only swung at one of them, and he hit it over the right field wall for an opposite field home run. The other pitches he watched, one called strike, and then he drew 4 walks. So seeing that kind of development from a guy when you know, like, this is the test he needs to pass, I mean, as rewarding as it is for him, it's just as cool to be able to kind of share those stories with the audience, especially for a guy that, you know, a lot of fans who might not, you know, be Woo Sox fans necessarily, but if they're Red Sox fans, you know, they're paying attention to a guy like Rafaela. So it's cool to be able to tell that story.
And I did want to talk about a little bit. We would obviously be in the room with you when pregame last year in Chad Tracy's office. And that was me and Chris's first time, like really being like behind the scenes, getting like a chance to do something like that. And I think we were really spoiled because Chad Tracy, we've heard from just about every single person that we would either talk about him or ask about around the game. And they're just like, that guy is going to be a major league manager someday. He's going to, you know, AAA is not his ceiling. Like he's going to get a job one day up in the bigs, and just a matter. It's not if, but it's when. So I want from your point of view, you've obviously been doing this for way longer than we have. So can you kind of just, I know you mentioned it already about Chad Tracy, but can you kind of just talk about what makes him, I guess, special and just, I don't know, just how lucky we are to have him in the system?
Yeah, I think when I think of the managers I've worked with, I guess, the ones that come to mind that stand out are Bobby Meacham. I think he's managing the Hartford Yard Goats this year. But after I worked with him in single-A for the Blue Jays, he was called up to be a big league base coach with Joe Girardi and the Phillies. John Schneider is another. He was the manager for that double-A Fisher Cats team with Bo and Vlad and Kevin Biggio. They all went up together. He's the major league manager now, John Schneider. And Chad Tracy, the thing that ties all those three guys together is, I think, communication and inclusion. Like those guys, and Tracy is as good as this as anybody. He wants you to feel part of the team. You know, he knows your name, he knows your face. And with players, it's all about that transparency. Like, you know, when guys get called up or trades or waiver claims happen, the guys who are in the clubhouse, sometimes their roles change and not for the better. And there's nothing worse for a player than just not seeing your name in the lineup every day and not really being told why and just having to guess. And the guess is usually, okay, I guess they don't like me anymore. Chad Tracy is the guy who sits you down, talks to you and tells you every step of the process, what you can do to get better, and how much they appreciate, you know, kind of the work people are doing away from the diamond. Like Marcus Wilson got a shout out last year for that. David Grillon is somebody Chad Tracy always talks about for the work he did, even though he wasn't in the everyday lineup. And players appreciate that. And the reason I think about those three managers I mentioned, all three of those guys, Bobby Meacham, you know, he was in the big leagues for a couple of years with the Yankees. John Schneider and Chad Tracy, I think, topped out at AAA. So they know exactly how hard it is just to get here, and they know how much it means to have that communication with your manager and just knowing where you stand, because there is a lot of guesswork for these players, I guess by design from the organizational level, to know when do I get called up, what do I need to do. But it's getting so much better because of guys like Chad Tracy, especially in the Red Sox system, with that top-down communication and letting guys know how they can continue to get better and giving them the resources to do so.
Another one of the players, too, was Hernandez. Ronaldo Hernandez, that was another player. And Chad was very open with us throughout the course of the season, just kind of, you know, he wouldn't really obviously go into the full details of what they talked about, but he was, to your point, he was transparent even with us to be able to, so we can kind of bring that message out to people who are following the team. So I like that you use transparent, because I felt that he was with that with everybody, even outside of the people with the org. He was with that with us too, to an extent that he could be.
Yeah, the best part I think about Chad Tracy is that, I'll put it this way, I'm going to challenge myself next year, guys, and I know you're going to be there for it. Can I ask Chad Tracy a question before a game in the press availability that's just so ridiculous that he refuses to answer it? Because you can throw anything. Our guy Bill Ballou, who we love dearly, he'll say, why aren't there pitchouts anymore in baseball? And, it, you know, maybe it's before like a Chris Sale rehab started. Maybe that's not the most pressing thing on his mind. Or he'll be asked just some outrageous things, even by me, and he'll just answer it completely professionally with a really well-thought-out response. So I'm wondering what his limit is. Like, what can we throw at him that'll throw him off? But he just – and we know his dad, Jim Tracy, was a former National League Manager of the Year, and the apple is, like, literally at the base of the tree with that one. I mean, they're so similar, so professional, and just awesome to be around.
I'd like to say that we're going to be kind of screwed one day when we have to go into a pregame availability, press availability for a manager, and we ask a question and it's not Chad Tracy managing, it's somebody else. And they're going to look at you and they're like, that was the dumbest question you probably could think of. And it's like, well, Chad never thought that way. He was always just like, he probably thought that. He probably thinks that in his head sometimes. Like, I feel like I've asked him a question where he's looking at me, he's like, why would you say that out loud? But he's never going to say that like to you. Like, he's going to answer it.
I think you guys did a phenomenal job. Maybe it was because your first year and you were a little conservative, but no, you guys always ask great questions. And but yes, for me, who's in there every day, sometimes I try to mix it up. You know, you see the team 150 times. You like to throw a few curveballs at them, so to speak. So we'll see what we can figure out this year. But yeah, I love that you guys have noticed that, how fortunate we are to have Chad Tracy. And I mean, the best thing to do is ask the players. Like, I mean, Christian Arroyo came down from the big leagues, and he was just like, man, this guy's great. And I said, what makes him good? And he's just like, communication, man. You know where you're at. He supports you. He's got ideas for how to get better. And I guess that seems like a baseline requirement for any manager, but maybe not. Maybe it's kind of what makes him special in the end. And his youth, I think, is going to help, because he can develop with a lot of these young guys and maybe one day join him at Fenway, which would be well-deserved.
Yeah, and he's got a – we've heard from our good friend Brian Abraham, too. He's got that catching background, too. So he's probably in high demand, at least someday, probably pretty soon. But I have to ask, because I did clip this whenever Chad came on our episode earlier in the offseason. But I asked him his favorite Tyler Murray story from last year.
Which is a ridiculous question. Like, if I'm creating stories that are memorable for the manager, that's an issue, man.
Well, I warned you that this was going to come up too, so I need something from you, that because you got to go on the road, so like you even got to see more of him than we did just at home, which I'm sure on the road is probably some better stories. I know you and Jim were trying some good food in other places, but do you have any good, like, your favorite Chad Tracy story from last year? It can be on the road, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean the road, when you talk about a road trip, what comes up to me is the last flight of the year. It was down to Gwinnett, Georgia, and you know, it's September, we're at game, you know, 140, winding down, guys are like, all right, we're ready to finish strong and enjoy the off season. And we get on the plane, which is delayed. I'm sitting next to Chad Tracy, which has happened three times, random seating, sitting next to him, short straw for him. And we're revving up, hitting high speed, off the runway, ready to go. And then the plane just stops moving, engine off, and then we're stationary. And then the captain comes on and he says, so yeah, an emergency maintenance light went off just before takeoff. This plane has to be taken out of service and retired forever. And everyone's like, oh, well, that's weird. So I turn to Chad Tracy and I say, you know what I'm thinking? And he goes, what? Good thing that alarm went off before we went airborne. And he looks at me like, yeah. But then I heard him say that same line to pitching coach Paul Abbott 30 minutes later. So I said, you know what? I had the right perspective on that. But yeah, that was an 8-hour delay in total. I went down to Gwinnett and had quite a time there in the vibrant city there just outside of Atlanta. But he treats us very well on the road. And those are, yeah, I mean, I want to see you guys on a road trip soon, because that one's a little more time to, you know, stretch your feet out a bit and be able to see the not less business side, but there's far less responsibilities on the road. So that's where he gets to really, really open up a little more.
Chris, I feel like there might be a Buffalo or Syracuse or I don't know. I feel like those might be the closest. Maybe a four-hour
drive to Syracuse from Worcester. Easy commute relative to Buffalo, which is double.
It's true.
Okay. That actually could be in the cards for this year. I know that I feel like they play at Syracuse like every other week, so or at Lehigh Valley or something. I got a lot of thoughts on the AAA schedule, but maybe we'll get into it later. And the playoff format was awful, but that was a treat being able to learn what that was like. There was like only two teams make it and they just go play. It's like, I don't know, it's weird. Okay, how you obviously have been very busy with hockey, and we've talked about this, but you've been heavy into Hockey East, but have you gotten to pay any attention at all to spring training, get to see any of the guys that were down in Worcester last year, see how they're doing? Just what has been your pulse, I guess, on it?
Oh, yeah, it's been really cool to see. I mean, yeah, I know maybe it's not a World Series roster right now, according to the pundits. But the fun stuff for us is we get to see a lot of Woo Sox in big league spring training. I mean, we just, you know, watched Tristan Casas mic'd up on ESPN. That was a lot of fun. So, this is the fun time of year. Loved hearing everyone talk about how valuable Nick Sogard is. Everyone's parroting the quote he gave you about being a good player for over a long course of time, but you wouldn't notice him after a day. I've said that backwards, but that's okay. But it's been cool to see him. It's Sadon Rafaela goes deep with Cooper Boardman on the call in Lakeland, Florida. That's amazing. And then I saw, I think it was Chris Henrique tweeted the other day how good Luis Guerrero has been in his 5 1/3. He's got 6 strikeouts for Luis Guerrero. And he is a guy I'm really excited to see maybe in the back end of the Woo Sox bullpen this year. I mean, speaking of that Gwinnett trip, his debut in AAA was down there. He goes 1-2-3 in the eighth with 2 strikeouts, hits 98 without too much trouble. So, I mean, this is the time of year where if guys pop from the minor league camp playing in a big league game, you keep your eye on them when they start off the season in Worcester. So that's really exciting for us.
Yeah, I was curious, though, if you like, because I know obviously like with the pitching staff that's coming into Worcester in 2024, it's obviously – I feel like that was like a big area that the team focused on, and they obviously with the few trades, like the Alex Verdugo trade comes to mind, that they, you know, you trade out a guy on the MLB roster, you bring back three pitchers, two of them being AAA or higher level. So it's like they definitely focused on like the upper minors pitching depth as like a huge area of need. Obviously, when you bring in Weissert and Richard Fitz and Cooper Criswell and a bunch of guys like that. So other than like Luis Guerrero, is there any guys like returning from last year's team? So I'm talking like in the group of like AJ Politi. I'm talking Chase Sugar. That's I always say his name wrong, but that's how you say it. Joe Jakes, any of the guys that are coming back, Justin Hageman. Are you excited to see any of them year two now coming back to Worcester?
I think I'm Joe Jakes' second biggest fan behind you, Andrew. So
that's correct.
And I hope we don't see Zach Kelly because he's made the big league roster, but you know, the oblique issue, maybe he has to ramp up in AAA. But Yeah, I mean, those are the guys, those are the grinders that, you know, went to schools you wouldn't think. I mean, Zach Kelly was a D2 school, and then Joe Jakes went Manhattan and just making it, again, just to get to AAA. It's crazy. It's so impressive for these guys. And then to get that shot at the big leagues is phenomenal. Cam Booser is another example, as you said, of, I mean, how can you not like easy 95 from a left-hander out of the bullpen for Cam Booser? So, I mean, Justin Hagenman, good strike thrower, maybe not that electric velocity, but we're hearing about so many guys working with that weighted ball program, trying to get that velo up. So that's exciting. 2 years ago, Franklin Herman, it was, I mean, the 22 season, the bullpen was a real strength. You had Herman, Kelly, and then Caleb Ort. Those three guys were as good as any combination in any International League bullpen, with the exception of, well, Greg Weissert, and he's coming over in that Verdugo trade you just mentioned. So we got him too. So this bullpen could be phenomenal. And it is interesting, though, to think about the plans they have for certain guys. Like when I think about Murphy and Walter, it's tough because they're asked to be starters in AAA. Then you get that call up. You have to be a reliever. It still blows my mind how well Chris Murphy was able to handle that. He was better in the big leagues than he was in AAA with that new role. So how do they handle things like that? That's always something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, I'm excited about the bullpen this year. There's too many guys to just focus in on one, to be honest. But you know, just to appease you, I will say our mutual friend Joe Jakes.
Thank you for that. Thank you for saying second biggest fan, because I don't know. It's just like it's something – it's obviously like he's a good person. Like when you meet him and talk to him, like he's one of the nicest guys that you'll meet. And then it's just like, obviously his story, like you said, going to, I think Manhattan's D3, maybe. I mean, they are D2, maybe. I don't know. They're not D1. I know that. So it's like, you know, you go to Manhattan, you're just a late round draft pick. I don't know. You bounce around, you're in a minor league Rule 5 pick ending up in AAA, and then making your debut in the same season. Like, oh, how can you not like that? Like, I cannot root for that. So
not even a preferred walk on. He just shows up right in Manhattan, yeah. Says, let me try out. And yeah, Manhattan got pretty lucky, I think, with that pickup for sure.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. It was just an easy story to report. But OK, so you did just bring up this name, and I want to ask him, because I don't think there's been any guys that have watched this pitcher more than you have the past couple years, because he's been pitching a lot in Worcester. But Brandon Walter, you did just bring him up. He already got optioned down to AAA. So he was one of the first guys to kind of get cut from big league camp. So we know he's going to be starting the year in Worcester, barring any more injuries or anything like that crazy happening. But they did option him already. So he's there. We're going to see him probably atop the Lou Sox rotation. Could be the opening day starter. Who knows? But what are you looking for out of a guy like Brandon Walter, who's now he's 27. I feel like this is the year, like this is a huge year for him. I feel like it's one of those that's like, all right, you got to go out and do your thing, or like, you know, the Reds, he's taken up a 40-man spot. So it's like, you know, he's got to have a good year. So I guess in your opinion, after watching him the past couple of years, you're going to see him again here in 2024. What are you looking for out of him?
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of opening day starter. I think that'd be a fitting opportunity for him, and hard to forget. It was Garrett Whitlock last year who was the opening day starter as a rehabber for the Woo Sox. But I mean, Walter was, I thought he was fine in spring training, right? 4 2/3 innings with a big league team, 4 Ks, and he gave up nothing but a solo home run to Alejandro Kirk. So I'll take that. But yeah, it goes back to what he and Chris Murphy were asked to do last year. And well, I think we found that Murphy, when you have him just let it rip for an inning or two, he can really ramp up that velocity. And that was kind of a pretty set role, I guess, as much as it can be for that long reliever. But when Walter went to the major leagues, it just seemed so inconsistent. Like, well, he went over 6 innings in his debut in relief, which was, you know, a record in that particular role. Then he's going 1 sometimes and going 3 other times. And for him, I mean, he just got to keep leaning on how well he handles lefties. I think his batting average against probably 60 points higher from right-handed batters, and that's pretty typical. So I think that getting that slider back to where we know it can be, trying to get into the back foot of a right-handed batter, that's going to be huge, because, I mean, the sinker changeup, I mean, that can play really well off of his slider with the way those particular pitches move. And I always go back to Walter for his double-A season 2 years ago now, and he had some outrageous numbers. I think it was 3 walks and 50 strikeouts. It was just absurd. And he just had, talking to him and Paul Abbott, like his confidence level, for good reason, was just so sky high. He's throwing whatever he wants and whatever count. And he has the confidence to think these guys can't touch me. If you get that confidence back, whether it's a good solid spring, you know, April and May in Worcester, whether it's getting an early season chance in the big leagues and making it happen, I just think for him, the confidence is everything. So I think he's got the stuff. A little more velocity would help, but he's got that, you know, that low slot lefty delivery. So I think that can still make him effective, even if it's not mid-90s every time. So I'm definitely a big Brandon Walter believer. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, the pressure's on, but every time he's been doubted, he's come through in a huge way. I mean, we talk about, you know, unheralded schools, but, I mean, he's from Delaware. He went to Delaware. The list isn't very long of mud hens in the big league. So Walter's a guy who's always seemed to win when betting on himself.
Yeah, that's Joe Flacco land, I'm pretty sure, University of Delaware.
He's so, elite. Yeah, he's elite. You're right.
Yeah. But yeah, regarding Walter, it is crazy to think about, too, that I wouldn't even consider him really a prospect anymore. I mean, he's 27. He's and it's always crazy to think about, too, because he was one of those guys that got drafted the year before COVID. So he pretty much and he was already 22 years old when he got drafted. So he had already like pretty much lost like a whole year, the 2020 season, obviously. So he starts out in 2019, in the FCL, and he gets like a little taste in. Then 2020, he would have been low A, and then he would have been progressing. So it's like, it is kind of crazy. You think about it sometimes, and it's like we're starting to see guys now like get up to AAA that lost like a whole year of their minor league development. So they're like a year older than what they should be, I guess, at the level where it's like I hear some guys like, oh, like Zach Penrod's like 26 and he's in AA or like about somebody else. And it's like, well, everybody lost a whole year whenever COVID kind of happened. So I feel like Brandon Walter's the guy, too, that's like he was already old on the older side when he got drafted and then he lost the whole year. So. Definitely looking forward to what he's going to do in 2024.
Yeah, when you think about it, I mean, his first full year was 21, so just 2 years later, he's in the major leagues. I mean, I think that's how you have to look at it. Maybe he's not going to pitch 20 years in the majors, but you know, it's not the end of the world if you're past 25 and you're still looking to establish yourself. The leash is still long. I would like to think on him.
Yeah, I'm with you. You mentioned our good pal Paul Abbott a few times. Are you gonna miss him at all?
Oh, immensely. I mean, I don't know if he'll miss me. I texted him in the off season, and it took I think 7 days for him to write back. He said he was on a golf trip, which does check out. Okay, but yes, pitching coach Paul Abbott. He said he responded and said, oh, it's one of my 9 favorite broadcasters. So, again, that's the parlance you need to have if you're trying to compliment one of us. You keep it general. But, no, I mean, he's phenomenal. He just did such a nice job welcoming us in. And I guess – and me in particular, he was here for the inaugural season. I was still in AA in 21. So just to be able to lean on him for his big league experience, I loved asking him about the 2001 Seattle Mariners. And he liked talking about it, but didn't love talking about it because you know how these guys are. They didn't win the World Series, even though they're one of the best teams ever with Ichiro and all them. But, yeah, just having a guy like that around, and you heard that from the pitchers all the time. A guy, you know, I grew up watching and has that kind of pedigree, to learn from him is such a big deal. And, yeah, he's gonna be a huge asset for the Oakland A's minor league organization, no question.
Have you gotten to – oh, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, have you gotten to speak with the WooSox new pitching coach?
No, well, not yet. We're excited to talk to him. You know, these guys, Cooper Boardman is our spring training representative. So everything goes through him as it should. So we'll try to talk to Dan very soon. But yeah, I mean, this is all part of Craig Breslow's, I mean, very highly touted pitcher development program. And as you guys know, any good leader, any good GM or chief of baseball operations, I mean, sure, you have to make the big decisions, but the results are going to come from who you hire. So I'm really excited to see his first few, I guess, hands-on hires at this level because, I mean, we've seen with Paul Abbott some really good success stories. John Schreiber certainly comes to mind, Joe Jakes, obviously. I mean, you can make or break careers based off of how the coaching staff is at AAA. So this is going to be a huge year for I think, Breslow to see what the trajectory looks like for how we can – see the Red Sox pitchers developed.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Obviously, with a lot of pitching-minded guys that are coming into the organization, and a lot of driveline guys, by the way, too. It's going to be interesting. And I think we just asked Stein Vandershoff last episode. That's a mouthful. About the changes that he's seen, because he was in the system last year down in the complex, and he was kind of telling us about just things that they do just in their bullpens, like going from 40 feet to 60 feet. He's like, yeah, we no longer go from 40 feet anymore. We did that all last year. This year we're doing 60 feet because I couldn't see how my stuff was finishing. And it's like, it's just small stuff like that you don't think about. So will be interesting to see the pitching minded guys coming into your organization. I had one more baseball related question before we shoot to little thing I like to do, a little speed run of non-baseball related questions. So that's right up your alley. But we talked about this earlier, though. You were at Fenway Park for the what did they call it for all the young guys to be there?
Yes, the rookie development program or a prospect showcase, you know. Young guys who are good all together for the media.
Yes. Okay. So you were at the rookie development thing. There was a week before a winter weekend, which we sadly didn't see you in Spring Vegas. That's fine. But so you were at Fenway Park. You got to see pretty much the I forgot how many guys were there, but I'm pretty sure it was most of the top 10 guys in the system were invited. So what was your takeaways from being able to interact with the guys? Because obviously they haven't made it to Worcester yet, so we didn't get to see them last year. So what was it like getting to interact with, you know, Roman Anthony, the Nick Yorks, the Kyle Teals of the world that before they even get to AAA?
Yeah, I'm just really impressed with how guys are maturing at such a young age to be ready for the Boston bright lights. I mean, it was all the big names in there besides you guys. Pete Abraham was there, Alex Speer, and, you know, they're asking these great questions. These are legendary journalists, and they're a dozen more. It's not just those two guys, but to kind of face the bright lights at age, you know, 19, 20, 21, and not just answer questions properly, but, I mean, Marcelo Meyer was who we talked to first, and the first question is, hey, Craig Breslow just said, it's all on you guys. You know, it's all about the core, this core four, core three, whatever you want to call it. What does that mean to you? He's like, yeah, we like those expectations. We have expectations for ourselves. We want to go up there and help this team in a World Series sooner rather than later. And, yeah, it's what you're supposed to say, but these guys are just – they're ready for it, I think. And it's just a matter of when they want to get bumped up. And, you know, you see the prospect rankings. Okay, you know, Anthony 1 now, Meyer 2. It's a list. Right? It's refreshing to see. I don't think those guys care about that very much at all. They shouldn't. I've never really heard players in the clubhouse say, oh, man, you're number 6 now. Like, it's a big thing for fans, but it was nice to see that that's not really a big factor at all in the optimism around Marcelo Meyer, because I think this kid's going to be a stud. And at the very least, their attitudes and professionalism are way ahead of where they should be, I think, at that young age. That was encouraging.
Yeah, we missed it. But we were hoping to see you at Spring Vegas the next week. You obviously didn't come, but that's okay.
What is Spring Vegas?
It's the old Springfield, Massachusetts for winter weekend for the Red Sox.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Yes. Hey, MGM. Gotcha. No, I was not there.
That was like all the same week. I'm pretty sure they did that camp and then like they all left to go to Springfield like that Friday or Thursday or whatever. So
I'm out of the loop. I haven't heard that. That's a really cool way to put it. Spring Vegas. Okay.
Yeah. You got to go just for the Friday night, because that's the time to go. That's where we all get together. We
break
Friday
bread.
Nights in wintertime. I'm almost always at a hockey rink. Well, not unfortunately. I very much enjoy it. But yeah, let's break bread somewhere else, you guys, another time. That could be good. Maybe at Polar Park soon.
Well, it's okay. I was told that once I moved to Nashua that we would get to hang out with my one of 9 favorite broadcasters, and it hasn't lined up yet. So maybe it will in the near future.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing this offseason. The trivia schedules, they're unpredictable for a little outing. Anyway, yes. Please continue.
Okay. I'm going to, unless Chris, do you have anything before I hop into some speed run questions here?
No, I think I'm going to piggyback off the speed run a little bit.
All right, Tyler Murray, I have a lot of faith in you because these are right up your alley. So
is this just like one, like as short an answer as I can give you?
Yeah, do whatever you want to do. Like, I mean, I say speed run, and then like some guys will talk about like an answer for like a minute. I mean, it's really up to you. I mean, it's your episode. Like, this is your episode.
It's number 70.
It used to be a timed segment. Andrew wanted this done in 5 minutes, and he cannot stay within the 5 minutes. So it is, I think speed round is really no longer, we have to rename it.
All right, let's try. Let's try 5 minutes. See what we can do.
All right. That's easy for me. All right. We're going to start us off here. I need your favorite movie of all time.
Ooh, I mean, The Departed is cliche, but it pops into my head. I'm watching a lot of movies lately, though, like the classics. So, like, Chinatown I really enjoyed. Godfather is what I'm supposed to say. But sure, The Departed I thought was great.
Okay, favorite TV show of all time?
Well, cartoon, Avatar The Last Airbender, the Nickelodeon original, not the Netflix remake. Rescue Me, Dennis Leary, New York Firefighters. Always enjoyed that one. And Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Okay.
You have a favorite episode of It's Always Sunny, or one that just quickly comes to mind when you name that?
It's too easy. It's the musical they do, the Dayman musical. It is the best one by far. So there's your answer.
As a Red Sox person, you were supposed to say the Wade Boggs episode, but it's okay.
Fair. R.I.P. That's a joke from that episode. Anyway, keep going.
What's a song that's on repeat in your head right now?
Ooh, wow, Delicate by Taylor Swift. Shout out my wife.
Shout out Ashley Green, all right, Unwell.
Very much so, shout out Ashley Green. Not my wife, but one of my wives.
No, sorry. Whenever I see Taylor Swift, whenever I think about, like, see a commercial, do anything, it's like Ashley Green is, like, popping up in my head because that's all I heard all summer long was about Taylor Swift.
Rent-free.
Insane, man.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Hashtag I am unwell because of you. That's, I immediately think that every time. So, but yes, shout out to Mrs. Murray, and then shout out to Mrs. Green as well.
That's right.
Okay. So you've made it up to AAA. If you had an ideal world and you had a crystal ball, where would you see yourself in 5 years from now? Like, what potential, like, job would you, what's your dream job?
I mean, my guilty pleasure team is the New York Knicks, because I'm insane. So yes, calling games at Madison Square Garden would be a lot of fun. But I mean, what's so bad about, you know, we get to call WooSox games on Nesson all the time. I get to do hockey on Nesson. So, you know, I've always wanted to call the Beanpot. Tom Caron does such a phenomenal job of that. So maybe one day that could be a good time. Hockey's championship would be a fun thing. If TC's ever at spring training, maybe I could fill in for him. But I'm more of a like next small step kind of guy than 5 years from now. But yeah, good question.
Do you still, or do you get nervous before going on the air? Is that something that's out of your system? Does that stay with you?
Good question. Is this still speed run? I'll go quick though. Okay. I only get nervous when a no hitter might happen, because if I screw it up, then it's going to be played over and over again, no matter what. So that's really it. And I asked the voice of the Rangers, Eric, about this. He was in a seminar recently. I said, okay, when the World Series call was coming up, did you just go off the cuff, or did you plan something out in advance? Cause I never really know. I'm like, am I supposed to script something for these big calls? And he said earlier in that day, he thought, man, this feels surreal. It's almost like we're dreaming. And then when he was on the air that night, he was like, you know what? I'm going to say, Ranger fans, you're not dreaming. They've won the World Series. So little things like that definitely help map it out a bit. But yeah, you kind of like, I'm like, should I say this? Should I say that? Does that make sense? Oh, wait, there's a game going on right now. So yeah, that can get you a little wound up.
Yeah, I was curious because we weren't around for the no-hitter in, what was that, 2022? So I didn't know if you guys had like prepped before, like the ninth inning comes around. Are you guys in the booth kind of like, okay, like we're three outs away, like do we get ready for this?
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of freaking out, but Mike Antonellis was in there with me, so he's the ultimate calming presence. And well, Devlin Granberg was the guy who he made a diving catch in left field, which I know I think they're going to stop playing that call before the games every single day, luckily for you. But because he made such a crazy play, we were able to just react in the moment like, oh, that was a crazy play. Hey, it's a no hitter. Instead of like, since the beginning of time, 27 outs have been hard to come by. You know what I mean? So we didn't do anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, Granberg kind of saved you there. If it was like just like a routine fly ball, it might not have been as exciting, you know? So
Yes, I agree. Shout out Devlin Granberg and Chase Sugart for giving up a catchable line drive.
All right, it's our guy Chase. All right, I am curious about this. One rule in the minor leagues that you would change if you could.
Oh, I always obnoxiously brag about the limited pickoff rule. Like I had that idea 10 years ago. We got there eventually. But a rule change that hasn't already been made in the minors, I actually do have one. Jim Cain will tell you, I bring this up almost every broadcast. If there are back-to-back walks, like we're sitting there and we're watching eight balls and fans are in the stands looking at their phones, nothing's going on, walk. There has to be a bigger punishment than, okay, there are two guys on base now. My crazy rule was, all right, pitcher, you're having trouble with the zone. Why don't you take a break? Go play right field. Bring the right fielder in to pitch. And how often do we see, oh, wow, he's throwing 67, but he gets a pop-up. I can't believe the position player got a batter out. It's not impossible. So, you know, take a batter off, recalibrate, and let's see what happens. Now, I'm not saying that should be a new rule, but that's the one I have in my head to answer your question.
Okay, fair.
You hate it. Wow. Anyway, keep going.
Who's your favorite athlete outside of baseball?
Jalen Brunson.
Wow. Of all time?
Oh, of all time? Oh, geez.
I guess.
In the history, Colby Cohen, who scored the BU 2009 overtime national championship game winner, who's one of my color commentators, big Colby Cohen guy. All-time favorites. Let's stick with that. I mean, my first favorite player was Mo Vaughn when I was a kid in Massachusetts. So there's one for you.
Jahart Singh the other night when he went down against Brunson went down. Cause I thought he was done.
Me too. He's questionable day to day. So I'm excited for the Knicks to get swept in the second round by the Celtics. that should be a good time. What a team Boston has this year. Oh my God.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast episode on the Celtics, but Chris doesn't have any Celtics pods. But
get someone if you want.
All right. Next question in the run here. I need one player, one, that you have ever called a game for that has stuck out to you the most, that you're just like, that guy is the best guy that I've probably ever called a game that he's been in. So like, who's the one player? It can be any team, any level, anything.
Vladimir Guerrero. No, it's not. It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 2018. He hit .402 in 60 games. And every time he was retired, it was on a line drive right at an infielder. He was phenomenal, but I mean, AAA for the Woo Sox. I mean, just the way Tristan Casas approached hitting and the buzz in the building when he came up, stayed on Rafaela defensively. And that road trip in Syracuse I referenced, he had a home run in five consecutive games. That's a Woo Sox record. It was nuts. So he had those flashes in the pan that get you excited, but just consistency and how are they going to stop this guy? It's definitely Vlad Jr., which I probably referenced too much because it happened like 6 years ago now, but he was the guy.
He's turned out pretty good. So
not bad. He would have won MVP if not for Ohtani a couple years ago. So
yeah. All right, I have some food questions here to finish it, and I know you're a food guy, so.
I mean, if it's free, it's for me. Is basically my menu, but keep going, please.
Okay, I need to know what would be like a guilty pleasure snack of yours?
Like 27 Oreos and milk in one sitting, like a lot of Oreos, double stuff.
Ooh. Okay.
It's like double the Oreo.
Yeah, it's incredibly unhealthy. There you go.
Okay. I need to know your best, your favorite pizza topping and then the worst pizza topping.
People who get mad about pineapple are hardos. Relax. That topping's fine. I used to like sausage and green pepper when I was a kid. Pepperoni's fine now. I'll go cheese pizza, like
yes,
just straight cheese. Like why? Final answer.
Okay. I need to know this answer from you. I need to know your favorite fast food fried chicken chain.
Oh, right. Oh, geez. I know you guys have a thing on this, and I almost want to side with people over places, but the answer is, unfortunately, I'm sure for someone, Raising Cane's chicken fingers. Final answer. Because of the sauce.
Have you ever tried Zaxby's, though? I just got to ask.
I've never even seen one in person.
All right.
So what do I do? Do I need to go to Missouri or something? Is it good enough to go to Missouri?
You need to go to the South.
Yeah. I've never had Zaxby's, though, so I can't add it.
Right. So what? Like, who's second place then? For regular people,
Cane's, chicken. Cane's in second place.
Oh, really? Okay, so I feel great about that then. Good job by me.
Okay.
Zaxby's. I mean, you're talking to New Englanders. We don't know Zaxby's.
I have a homework assignment for you. I have a homework assignment for you.
Hop on a plane and go south of the Mason-Dixon and eat some chicken? That's ridiculous.
No. You got to listen to me here. I'm looking at the WooSox schedule right now. Do I see a trip to Charlotte this year?
People are saying we might go to North Carolina this year, yeah.
Okay, so if you are down in Charlotte, there's plenty of Zaxby's in Charlotte. That's all I'm asking, just one time for lunch, something.
Sure. Okay. Sure. I will go to this fast food chicken restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the problem is you've overhyped it, but because you're my guy, I will try it with an open mind.
Thank you. There's a few guys down in AA right now who are Zaxby's fiends. You got Blaze Jordan, who loves Zaxby's. You got Alex Spinellis, two guys that will be up in Worcester probably one day very soon. And they are Zaxby's addicts like me. So I'll be hanging out on that side of the locker room when they get up. All right. So I got one last question for you in regards to food. So you got to go on the road quite a bit last year. Where was the best city you traveled to? I guess I'm even going to open up to all time when you're a broadcaster. So traveling on the road, what city was the best food destination that you've been to for work?
What's a good, I mean, Louisville definitely stands out. They have this thing called the dirty something. I always forget, but it's famous. It was very good. They had that bourbon tour. Jim did the bourbon tour. He loved that one. We went to the Louisville Slugger Museum, but yeah, in terms of like stuff that stands out with the most stuff to do, we hit Churchill Downs, not the Kentucky Derby, but it was 2 weeks later. That's more of a beverage that sticks out than food. But yeah, man, it was great down there. We really enjoyed it. I mean, just getting out of the regular, I guess, New England fare, like you said, Zaxby's down south. So we'll try to check that out. But yeah, the southern cities have been fun, like Norfolk, Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky. Even Jacksonville, Florida wasn't so bad.
All right. All right. So that was my speed run. It went probably about 10 minutes, so I apologize for that.
Chris, he added in a very good question that took me a while to answer. So let's not blame anybody for the going over the five.
I know. I can't call it a speed run anymore because like we like to do follow-ups because sometimes the answers are like pretty good. So we're just like, well, we got to dig into that. We can't just let that one sit there. I did let the rule thing sit there because I'm like, I don't know if that's going to ever get any traction, but
nope. I always, once it leaves my mouth, I'm like, why am I saying this? So it's just, that's just how it goes.
We need to put a live cam on in the booth for Jim cam. Whenever you do say something like that, I want to see him look over you and be like, oh, okay.
You know, I was thinking about this though. Shout out Jim. He's got the best fake laugh in the business. Okay. It's a very important skill to have. And the dichotomy is Cooper Boardman, who fake laughs at everything. This might be news to the two of you. If Cooper Boardman laughs at you and he doesn't say the words "that's funny" afterward, he is lying to your face. It's a fake laugh, and it's silent as well, which does nobody any favors on the air. So, two thumbs up for Jim Cane in that department.
Oh no, I feel like I probably said some things to him, and that's I got that reaction. Yes.
You think in your head right now that Cooper Boardman thinks you're funny? I'm telling you, he doesn't. He's a very nice guy, as we know. He does like he puts his hands on his chest and he leans over like, oh, I'm laughing so hard I can't even make a sound. No, that's a lie. So sorry to break that.
I am now seeing different instances this season or this past year of interactions that I've seen, especially in the especially inside of in Chad's office or.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I always see a smile on his face too, so it's like it's hard. Like he's always a happy guy. So.
He is happy. He's wonderful to be around, but he is lying to you with laughter. So yes, for your breakout clips on Twitter, not this one and not my dumb rule. Okay, that's my only request. Thank you.
All right, fair. I am thinking, though, I did listen to Coop on the radio with Bradfo the other day, and I feel like every time Bradfo would, like, say something, you know, Bradfo's kind of a jokester. He's a funny guy.
Oh, he's great. It's a good vibe. I like it.
I feel like Cooper, though, may have thrown in some fake laughs every now and then, now that I'm thinking about it. I couldn't see his actual face or anything, but yep. He didn't say that's funny.
All I'm going to think about this year is lying with laughter. That's going to be, like, the slogan's going to stick with me.
Yes, we need to, you know, rage against that machine that is Cooper, who we absolutely love. We are really lucky to have our entire crew, but Cooper's been with the squad forever, so we're lucky to have him very much.
He might be a Yankees fan, but I know that people accept him in New England. So I did have one last question before we let you go here. I haven't talked to you about it since it happened, but obviously we know you're a big 49ers guy. And America was rooting for you and you let us all down, but do you have just any final thoughts in regards to actually I want to know just like how did the Super Bowl go for you?
I mean that's your worst question of the podcast so far, but you know, I thought it was over it, Andrew, until you just brought it up. But what I've been saying lately is, how many people do you guys know, besides Buffalo Bills fans, that have experienced 3 Super Bowl losses and 0 wins? And it's all happened, unfortunately, in the last 10 years. The power went out against the Ravens, and they had the ball at the 2-yard line and couldn't score in the Harbaugh. Then they're up 10 on the Chiefs in the fourth quarter and then lost that. That's Jimmy Garoppolo. You know it's going to happen. And this one was like, the Niners should be up by a lot. They're not. They have Patrick Mahomes. This doesn't feel right. Dre Greenlaw's ACL, his Achilles blows up randomly. And then Christian McCaffrey, the best player in the league, fumbles on the opening drive. So it's like, you know, it's just not our year. So, yes, it hurts. But, you know, maybe I'm just not a guy who deserves that kind of happiness, you know, like just sitting back and hoping that, you know, millionaires, you know, just make my day or make my year. It's just not the life I'm meant to live is what I've decided. But you know, we're very lucky to be able to watch them play in almost every game all year long. They get to the Final Four and then lose in one of the next 2 games horribly. So things are fine. Thank you for asking.
I had to throw it in. You know,
we still support Kyle Shanahan, I'm sure no one cares, but I'm from Connecticut. Steve Young was the hometown hero in my hometown, so that's why I'm a Niners fan. It makes no sense, but there you go.
It's okay. I had to ask. That was the last thing I had for you. I remember.
Then Chris, ask me a good cleansing question so I don't leave this great interview depressed, because you guys did a phenomenal job. I need another one. I need a chaser, I guess.
Good cleansing question.
Yeah. Do you like Woo Sox record prediction?
Let's go with, who do you think is going to hit the furthest home run not named Bobby Dalbec for the Worcester Red Sox this season?
Well, that's a little unfair, because I was going to say Bobby Dalbec, but if Abreu doesn't make the opening day team, I'll go Willie Abreu. I hope he makes it, of course. I am excited about the lineup, though. I mean, if you get Hamilton and Rivera with their speed, and then Bobby Dalbec, and then Mark Contreras seems like he's got some pop, so that could be a nice little top of the lineup combo. So excited for that. Thank you for asking me another question.
I have a sleeper pick for that. It's Romy Gonzalez. He probably hit one that was like 500 feet the other day. That was impressive.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one where my guy Will Fleming was like, oh, my God. Like, they were telling a funny story, and then he's like, hang on. That was like the
best. Yeah. Will Fleming, like, freaked out about it. And I was listening to it on radio because it wasn't on TV. And when Will Fleming freaked out about it, I was like, whoa, all right, I got to see that video. So it ended up being a tank. So, all right, Tyler Murray. You've given us like 55 minutes of your time, man. That's incredible. I know your schedule's busy. You got an off day today, so that's good. But we're excited to see you. I think we're about like, what, 2 weeks away from media day and opening day for the Woo Sox, March 29th, man. It's quickly approaching. So
that is soon. Yes.
Yeah, definitely looking out for that. But thank you so much for joining us today.
You guys are awesome. Congrats on 70 episodes. The content machine that you guys have become is incredible, and great to see everybody supporting your work. So thanks for having me. And we'll see you soon. Should be a fun year. Woo Sox 24.